This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. You made it to Friday. It's November 3rd, 2017. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. Mostly cloudy, a cool breeze today, high temperature of 50. It's 42 right now at O'Hare and 44 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. The markets are trading in positive territory. Let's get the update now from Elisa Parenti of Bloomberg.
Indeed, Rob and Chris, we're looking at record highs across the board for the three main averages. The Dow up 34. Any gain is a record for the day. NASDAQ up 35 points at 67.50. Again, besting its highest ever level by about 25 points. S&P is higher by 3 points above its highest ever close with a gain of 6 at the moment. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index advancing 0.3%. Economists were predicting a bounce back from that tough September for employment, and that is what we received for October, although not by quite as much as predicted. 261,000 jobs were added to payrolls last month. The survey of economists was forecasting a gain of 313,000 jobs. We also see that dog of a disappointment, the September look, which had negative 33,000 jobs thanks to the hurricanes. That was revised up, so we've now got plus 18,000 for that month. And that means the streak of 7 years of consecutive monthly job gains, the longest of its kind, remains intact. Unemployment rate expected to be 4.2%, what we got, 4.1%. A big takeaway, and it's a negative one, wage growth remains elusive. There was no improvement in average hourly earnings when we look from September to October. As for Apple, that is the big stock story of the day, gaining more than 3% now at $173.18 a share, its highest ever close upon a very welcome reception to its iPhone X. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we will examine today's jobs report with economist Diane Swonk. And Starbucks is climbing back now after a morning sell-off. We'll tell you about that.
And we'll also talk about the issues surrounding the sudden shutdown of DNA Info Chicago, the hyper-local news site. And it's Entrepreneur Friday. We will talk to the founder of Fly Homes, which helps buyers in a seller's market.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Data on jobs, factory orders, services lead off the news on the economy today. And we are talking about it with Diane Swonk, economist and founder of DS Economics at DianeSwonk.com here in Chicago. Diane, let's start with the jobs report this morning. What does it really say?
Well, it says that the economy was certainly resilient through the hurricanes, even though we got the nice rebound after a weaker upward revised September. It was a little less than people expected, but still there. And I think the important thing is that we forgot that we still have a lot of disasters out there. The week the survey was taken for the month of October was when the fires were in California and there was massive evacuations. Any hourly workers that couldn't show up to work that week actually were affected. So I think that's why that was a little bit light. The bad news was that we got that decline in the unemployment rate for the wrong reasons. The unemployment rate dipped down to 4.1% with a huge drop in labor force participation. It was across the board, men, women of all ages, but the largest decline was among teens. And so we're just really not getting those soft skills out there of teens actually participating in the labor force. And that's something that has been a long-term trend. It got exacerbated by the Great Recession when they were competing with 50-year-olds and plus for minimum wage jobs. But it really is something that we're watching because it's something that they're not getting the soft skills other generations once got. The other issue is that wage issue. We knew that the wages got artificially juiced by the fact that the composition of job gains in the month of September, all the low-wage jobs dropped off because they had electricity outages in Florida and no one could get to work. They came back in the month of October. We also had a deceleration in construction wages, which I just don't think is sustainable given the acute labor shortages and the need for repairs now out there.
What does the Fed do with the economy looking a lot better, but the wage growth is still a big problem?
You know, they've already basically made clear that it's a foregone conclusion they will raise rates in December and that they will look through the noise created by the hurricanes, which boosted and slowed down wages depending on which month you looked at. And so they're going to average it and say, you know, we're not going to worry about it for now. The real debate will come next year as Jay Powell becomes the new chair of the Fed, and he has to really deal with a growing divide within the Fed about those who believe no more rate hikes versus those that believe, listen, we're starting to stoke asset price bubbles here. Whether or not there's inflation, the economy is robust, and we should be raising rates.
Well, let's talk about wage growth for just a second. It has been lagging behind job growth for quite some time. So what happens if we do have a slowdown in the economy and wages start falling and they never really caught up in the first place?
Well, there lies the rub, and this is the real issue, and it's not something that the Federal Reserve can do much about. This is on the burden of fiscal policy, and unfortunately, it's not just tax and redistributive policies from the tax policy. What we really need is something more fundamental in terms of helping people to gain more skills. In fact, the current, you know, proposals out there don't allow people to take student debt as a deduction. They're interested in student debt as a deduction, investments in human capital. Those are things that we need going forward. We also need to see the economy operating with more efficiencies overall. We need more productivity growth. And it's starting to hit me that as much as I think we need tax reform, and I really do think we do, it's going to blow a hole in the deficit. I'd much rather do it to infrastructure spending where you would get higher wages and you'd get productivity growth accumulating down the road.
Thanks a lot, as always, Diane Swonk, economist and founder of DS Economics at dianeswonk.com, based in Chicago. Coming up, we'll talk about the struggles at Starbucks. They are venti-sized.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Starbucks is dealing today with missed expectations, weak sales, and changing consumer habits. Let's talk about the future of the coffee giant with R.J. Hadavi, consumer equity strategist with Morningstar here in Chicago. R.J., welcome back to the program. Let's start off with some of the issues at Starbucks. What were some of the factors driving their miss today?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is we've seen a slowdown in the U.S. comparable store sales. So sales that locations have been open for more than a year in North America. I think a lot of it has to do with what you mentioned, changing expectations. Effectively, the company's trying to service two different groups right now. One, a group of people that just want a quick cup of coffee, want to pay with their mobile device, get in and get out, but also the legacy customer that enjoyed the experience that the Starbucks stores offered. And to be honest, that's a tough balance to crack right now. On top of that, you've got an intensely competitive environment at the same time right now. You know, a lot of new sources of competition, particularly the premium side, that I think have been weighing on results. I think that's the biggest issue that the company's been dealing with.
And when you say there's a great deal of competition, that morning cup of coffee, just anecdotally, is rather habitual. You make your Starbucks run because it's convenient to work or it's on your way to the train station. So what are some of the things that might be driving those changing consumer habits inside the morning cup of coffee space?
Yeah, I think one is new offerings. You know, you see a lot of competitors. It can be somebody at the premium end, whether it be an independent coffee house or something like a McDonald's or even changes on the menu at Dunkin'. You know, things that you know, traditional competitors are doing or new entrants, I think, you know, sparks a level of curiosity among consumers, and I think that's been a big part of it. You're also seeing a lot of discounting in the space, a lot of promotions to drive traffic. So I think that's been a big part of what's been driving the competition. You know, that said, I think some of the things that Starbucks is doing to capture and lock in its consumers with mobile order and pay, you know, things like that, you know, also starting to show some traction there too. So at least the company has some competitive countermeasures in place that they can work with.
The stock immediately plunged, but now we're seeing it up about 3 percentage points. What are investors feeling today about the stock?
Yeah, the reaction right after the announcement had to do with you know, the company's reduced outlook for the over the next couple of years. It was no surprise that, given the struggles this year, the company was probably going to take in its long-term numbers. When the press release hit last night, it was a little bit weaker than what the market was looking for. But after having management explain what's going on, I think it's a case where they just wanted to be a little bit more conservative given the competitive and the other changes they're making in the system. And that's why we've seen a bit of a reversal and now the stock up today. I think what's interesting about this is by doing so, I think they've revealed a number of things that maybe didn't get as enough focus over the last couple of years, things like the opportunity they have in China or the fact that they're going to really ramp up their shareholder returns, both buybacks and dividends. Those are things that also add to the overall investment thesis on Starbucks, and I think that came to the focus during the call last night.
Do you have a recommendation on Starbucks?
Yeah, I think we like the story from a longer term. It's one of our favorite names in the restaurant space, and even more so now that it's trading at a discount to a lot of the fast food companies like McDonald's and restaurant brands, the parent company Burger King. We've got a $66 fair value estimate, so see quite a bit of upside from where they're at today.
Thanks a lot, RJ Hottovy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar, based in Chicago. Coming up, what the shutdown of DNA Info means, and on Entrepreneur Friday, a company that offers guarantees to buyers in overheated housing markets. But we have business headlines coming up next.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets now with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow is up 29 points, improving on its highest ever close from last night. That's a gain of more than 0.1%. The NASDAQ is at 67.51. That's a record high, advancing more than 0.5%. S&P higher by 6. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is gaining 0.3%. Crude oil futures trading above $55 a barrel right now, adding a 1% gain on a weekly move higher as well. We have a check of the grain markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are lower. We're seeing profit taking after this week's price run-up as the technical indicators did reach some upside, short-term upside of price objectives. Export news is on the slim side for next week. Then also next week's monthly supply demand reports expected to show a slight bump in yields. Corn 2.5 to 3 cents lower, beans trading 12 to 13 cents lower, and the wheat market's 3.5 cents lower. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thank you, Kurt. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
We take a look at the business of news as another organization bites the dust. That and What's Moving Wall Street coming up on the Noon Business Hour.
Entrepreneur Friday, a company that offers to make a home buyer's bid as good as cash.
Apple rallies on launch day of the iPhone X.
Cook County Democratic leaders endorse State Senator Kwame Raoul to replace Attorney General Lisa Madigan.
And President Trump says a military judge's ruling on that Sergeant Bo Bergdahl will serve no prison time for desertion. He says that's a disgrace.
Wall Street, the Dow Industrials up 29, the NASDAQ up 39, and the S&P 500 up by 6.
AccuWeather forecast for this afternoon, mostly cloudy with a cool breeze and a high of 50. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
The hyper-local news website DNA Info has joined the ranks of the nation's defunct news organizations. Abruptly, let's talk about the future of the business of journalism with Bob Chanik, media reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for joining us today, Bob. Tell us what we learned yesterday afternoon.
Well, it was kind of a sudden piece of news at about, I think it was about 5 o'clock, but in the afternoon, DNA Info suddenly shut down, posted messages on its websites, specifically from Joe Ricketts, the CEO of DNA Info, that it was closing, and that, in fact, all the stories that had been posted over the 8 years or so that DNA has been up and running were gone. It was just replaced by this letter from Joe Ricketts that he couldn't keep running it, and that's where we stand today.
How much of a weight on this was the fact that a week ago the staff there voted to unionize?
Clearly, it was a factor. DNA spokesperson said it made it harder for the business to be financially successful. They said they have lost money every year since launching DNA Info, and the hyper-local space has been a pretty treacherous space. A number of companies have struggled to make it work. The union itself is also pointing a finger at the fact that, you know, 1 week after unionizing, they closed up the entire operation.
Why not? Why not sell it? Why not? Why not try to find a buyer for it instead of just shutting it down?
Well, it's not something I could answer, but I do know. I mean, that would, you'd have to ask Mr. Ricketts. But you know, the fact is, it's a difficult market to sell. If you look at the Tribune's recent purchase in New York, the rumored price was $1. The Sun Times sold for $1. So not a lot of money floating around for people interested in buying media, even, you know, a digital media operation like this. That specifically, they said they're not making money. So they're hard to value. But I you'd have to get inside the head of the folks who decided to shut it down. I really couldn't answer that.
This is a statement of some kind on media going forward. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it's you know, traditional media are trying to reinvent themselves digitally. The New York Times has been the most successful. They make more money now from, you know, selling subscriptions, digital subscriptions, than they do from advertising. So that's, you know, reversing the traditional longstanding model of newspapers and offers hope. I mean, they're making money, they're growing. But the industry at large, traditional newspaper journalism, is losing ground every year in terms of revenue as print advertising goes away and the digital advertising hasn't really replaced it. The future seems to be selling online, subscriptions. But you can see how challenging it is for media when you have a purely digital media product that, you know, was generally regarded as high quality and you know, valuable, but apparently couldn't make a go of it financially.
Thanks for joining us today, Bob. Bob Chanik is media reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And join us at 1:20 this afternoon for follow-up Friday segment. We're going to be talking about this story with Andy Shaw from the Better Government Association.
Well, markets have been trading in positive territory all afternoon, so let's find out what's been moving the markets today from Brian Battle, who is the director of trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. Brian, it's safe to say that the markets are like a battleship. They chug along. They don't make any sudden twists and turns, and they tend to kind of shrug off current events, the most recent one being the October employment report.
Exactly right, Rob. We had a jobs report that was really shaded by the weather events in September. So we had a gigantic payroll increase of 261,000, but last month, you know, jobs were minus 33,000. So there's a lot of static in the numbers here. So it kind of was discounted. The unemployment rate fell to 4.1 from 4.2. The only disappointment, if there was one, in the jobs report was that hourly earnings were unchanged at up 2.4%. So there was some hope that there might be some growth in wages, which would be good for everyone, and we really didn't see it. So the jobs report came out this morning, but we're kind of shrugging it off because of all the weather events and the hurricanes and the storms we had in September.
If you wanted to speculate, if you had wage growth maybe in the 5% range or the 6% range, how would that impact the economy in terms of greater spending power on the part of us?
Right, so there would be two reasons for wages to go up that much. First is a good reason, and there would be demand for labor. So if wages were going up that fast, that would imply that we had a rip-roaring economy. So that would mean the Federal Reserve would be trying to probably raise rates to prevent inflation from getting out of control, and that would be a great thing to have, is growth and 5% wage gains and jobs for everyone. If wage gains are up 5% because there was in nascent inflation or insidious inflation where just the price of everything was going up because there was too much money, that would be bad inflation, and that would mean there's not a lot of job growth. It's just that all prices are going higher. So we'd have to see which one that we get, but I think the Federal Reserve's expectation is that we're getting growth, and what they're frustrated with is it isn't causing wage pressure. So the market is sort of waiting to see if there's real wage growth. Not so much unemployment anymore. They're kind of ignoring that. They're looking for wage growth. The only other thing moving the markets today is the announcements of tax reforms yesterday.
Thanks a lot, Brian Battle, Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners in Chicago. Coming up on Entrepreneur Friday, a twist on American home sales.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Entrepreneur Friday. We're talking to the founder of a real estate brokerage and tech company that has a platform to help buyers through the home buying process. Joining us is Chicagoan Stephen Lane, founder and CEO of Fly Homes in Bellevue, Washington. Stephen, welcome to the Noon Business Hour.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
How is your platform different from a traditional transactions in buying a home?
Yeah, so we started this a couple years ago when I bought my first house in Evanston. And what we've done is we've really taken what, in a traditional sense, most real estate agents are generalists and then do everything. And we've broken it down and provided today's generation of home buyers a real subject matter expert on every piece of the transaction. So we provide every single client a local expert who's assisted by a team of experts, full-time negotiators, full-time tour leaders, full-time operations folks, and combine that with what is what we think is an unbelievable reward system. Our clients can earn rewards for their entire home purchase. That ranges from getting airline miles for their entire house price, us covering all the closing costs, or even Lyft credits for an entire year of free Lyft.
How has the housing market been since you started up 2 years ago?
It is crazy. The one of the things that we've done as a company is we focus on some of the hottest markets in the U.S. So we launched our company out of Seattle, Washington, where we're now the number one ranked real estate brokerage in the area, and we've expanded to San Francisco, Boston, and Chicago. So we've built an expertise in terms of helping buyers specifically in markets where it's incredibly difficult to buy a house. And obviously, in terms of those timing, the market has driven and gotten more competitive over the last couple of years.
And how did you guys originally break into getting NMLS listings and trying to go shoulder to shoulder with traditional real estate companies? How'd that work out?
Well, it was definitely very difficult. So we actually launched this company while I was finishing a JD MBA at Northwestern at Kellogg. And we started off, and you started off with one house. And I've got a number of colleagues at Microsoft that started using us, and we've kind of branched out from there. We've grown from starting from nothing to one of the biggest players in the market. And I think one of the things that we've learned is we're not in this market alone. Whereas some other competitors in the space have been viewed as a discount player in the space, we focus heavily on providing the number one level of service to our clients. And what that's done is actually helped us to be a great partner in the industry. We've had many different real estate agents actually choose to use us as their buyer's broker as well.
And so where do you make your money?
So we actually, since we operate on the sell side, we haven't changed the economics of the business. So traditionally in real estate, if you're selling your house, you have a commission number that you pay your listing agent, and half of that number is split with the buyer's brokerage firm. So what we do as a company is we take that commission number that the sellers pay and use it to run our business to help clients throughout the entire process. And then we use a large portion of that to purchase incredible rewards for the clients. So it costs buyers nothing to use our service. And I think in terms of the value that we provide, we regularly hear from clients that it is way more than anything they could have imagined.
Thanks a lot, Stephen Lane. Good luck to you, founder and CEO of Fly Homes in Bellevue, Washington. Up next, the launch of the iPhone X, and Apple is having a very good day.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, it is a big day for Apple. Joining us to talk about it is Mark Gurman, tech reporter for Bloomberg News based in San Francisco. We see that Apple stocks up about 3 percentage points at 173.62. What's fueling this, Mark?
Definitely the guidance for the Q1 upcoming quarter. Yesterday, Apple announced the results for Q4 coming in at $52.6 billion, which is some year-over-year growth, a significant margin over last year, actually. But the real story is the holiday quarter. They're projecting sales and revenue between $84 billion and $87 billion, which would be unprecedented and an all-time high. I think investors are seeing people lining up around the world for the iPhone X, indicating that Apple's probably going to be dead on at that guidance or even beat it for the holiday quarter.
Yeah, the iPhone X is on the market now. How does it look in terms of, it's just the beginning, but what are they expecting in sales?
Yeah, reception has been actually very strong so far. We believe that they're going to hit an all-time sales record for iPhone units sold in 2018 across the fiscal and calendar year, given that there's been a lot of pent-up demand for this redesigned phone, the first redesigned iPhone since the iPhone 6 launch back in 2014.
You got to hand it to Apple. In Chicago, there was a long line this morning outside of the brand new Apple store on Michigan Avenue at the Chicago River. And in a day and age when everybody wants to do their shopping online, they don't want to go to a store, to get a large number of people to not only go to a brick and mortar store, but actually line up before it opens.
Stand there overnight.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's something we really haven't seen much since the original iPhone launched back in June of 2007. I think a lot of people are lining up, one, because they want to have that experience. They want to line up with people. I don't particularly agree with it, but obviously there's people who are interested in that type of thing. But when the iPhone 10 went on sale for pre-orders, it quickly shot up to load times of 5 to 6 weeks till the phone would arrive at your doorstep. So I think people realize that going in on day one, they'd have a better chance of getting the phone more quickly than waiting about a month and a half.
Very quickly, if in the distant future, in the iPhone 15 doesn't draw a crowd, does that mean it's the end of the technology?
No, I don't think so, given that we didn't really have many crowds for the iPhone 8, the iPhone 7, and some of the phones interim between the original iPhone and the iPhone 4, 5, and 6. So I think this is a trend. It's a pattern. Some years we have it. Some years we don't have it. This is one of the years where people are lining up. So if people don't line up for the 15, maybe some people line up for the 16. I guess we'll have to, you know, have this conversation a few years from now to find out.
All right, we will. Mark Gurman, tech reporter, Bloomberg News in San Francisco. And you'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at cbschicago.com/audio and the all-new radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. WBBM Business is sponsored by Lake Forest Sports Cars, the Ferrari specialists. Here's Lisa Parenti of Bloomberg.
Rob, we have record-breaking gains across the board. The Dow is up 35 points, NASDAQ higher by 40, S&P adding 7. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is higher by 0.3%. We got the October jobs report, and with the revisions in job creation for the prior month, the gains look solid. Looking at the jobs that were blown away by the hurricanes in September, it does appear they're coming back. But some lost jobs are not hurricane related, and they seem to be gone for good. Sears Holdings has closed more than 350 Sears and Kmart stores this year. Now we're learning of another 63 stores that will close in January after the holidays. The company says the liquidation sales will begin as early as next week. Stock in Sears is down about 4%, and it is the worst performer on our local benchmark. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.